This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Thank you for listening to the Covert Nerd Podcast. I really appreciate the time that you give me. Before we get into the episode, if you can think of somebody that would like this topic that you're about to listen to, please pause the podcast and share it with them. You can also go to covertnerd.net and look at previous episodes and different ways that you can get in touch with me. Let me know what you think. Without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up. Back for another darker and edgier Covert Nerd episode with our great guests, Al and Ben from Omug Comics. So say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hi. And today we're going to do two different things. We're going to talk about company crossovers. So in the past, I don't know if we've had any lately, guys. Maybe you can refresh my memory. But in the past, you would occasionally do some DC Marvel. You would do Dark Horse Marvel, Valiant, Dark Horse. Lots of company crossovers in the 80s and 90s. But I don't know. I guess, participate as much in the current comic book world as I did. But have you seen any recent company crossovers?
I think there have been a couple since then, just smaller ones, not quite the big summer event that we remember. And then, in fact, Spawn and Batman are crossing over yet again.
Yes, I heard
That's
about
gonna
that.
That's going to be coming out soon. Yep. It's Capullo and McFarlane are teaming up on that.
We're going to talk about that. And then some fun things. Comic book ads. So we all remember flipping through DC and Marvel comics and seeing these ads, and those are very nostalgic. So we're going to go through some of those. But first, as our tradition is, Al is our artist extraordinaire, and he's always really good at recognizing who the artist is. So we'll do only three, Al. Who's the artist?
Okay.
So we'll get started. We show Al a cover, and then he tries to guess who the artist is. So we'll get started
three
here with that.
Three chances to fail.
Three chances to win. So here's one. This one's pretty easy, I bet you.
Oh, that's Mark Bagley.
Yes, Mark Bagley. Because you were a Spider-Man fan, so I figured you'd know.
Yeah, I had that issue.
Yeah, okay.
He took over after Eric Larson left to go do Savage Dragon.
Yes, yep. Yeah, really good, fun cover. So Mark Bagley. Next one. This one might be a tough one for you.
No, that's Keith Giffen.
Oh, really? Okay. How did you know him? I didn't know if you'd know him or not.
I read that book, and the guy's style was fascinating because of how just insanely busy it is.
I kind of forgot about him. He's very distinct. It's very blocky or busy. Yeah, I guess that's, yeah. But, yeah, he's got a very distinct, oh, well, I left the GIF down in the corner there on the lower left hand, but yeah, he's very unique. He's on uniqueness of like Sam Keith or some of those others that are very distinct. So
I couldn't imagine the nightmare that would be black coloring that guy's work.
Oh, you're right. Because there's just stuff everywhere. You can see bullets.
Yeah.
You can see everything has a distinct shape. Nothing really blends in with anything, does it?
No, and just all the different shapes in in his coat and just different objects. There's just shapes in there, and you have to try to figure out what's what and what needs a different color.
Is it too busy?
I think some of his work tends to get too busy.
Okay.
It depends on what the book is and who the editor is and what they're going for. But I think there's times where it just is really excellent and not too busy.
Last but not least.
I'm going to guess John Byrne.
No. Try one more. No. I'll give you the next one. You'll know right away who it is. But
Ron Lim? No.
Nope.
Dale
Keown. There you go. I had the hardest time finding a non-Hulk or non-Pitt cover from Dale Keown in the 90s. Right. But he did do issue of She-Hulk in the early 90s. Right. I mean, if I show you, again, I show you Pitt, you'll know immediately. Or I show you a Hulk cover, you'll know immediately who it is. But he really didn't do much other than Hulk and Pitt. That was pretty much it. He did some Spawn penciling.
Yeah.
But that was about it.
Yeah, I think there was some other, She-Hulk, there was other issues here and there. But, I mean, he was so good at that, the big group.
excellent at the Hulk. One of the probably, if you name Incredible Hulk, it's immediately you think of Dale Keown, especially in the 90s and late 80s. So cool. All right. Well, good job, Al. Get some 800 covert nerd coins. Spend them wherever you want. We're going to talk crossovers next. First one that we thought of was the Marvel versus DC back in, I think it was 96 was one of the first big crossover events of that I thought of in the 90s that you guys thought of too. Was the DC versus Marvel comics. So I don't, did you guys buy these or do you remember getting these or at least seeing them?
I do remember seeing them. I did not, I never bought them.
So what they did was Marvel and DC got together and decided to do these basically a versus. Now they had done a versus type of crossover event back in the 80s where they team up and have to fight each other, you know, like Spider-Man versus Superman and stuff like that. But this one was a one that they did do the same type of thing, but this was early in the internet days. So they had the readers go online and vote for who they wanted to win the battles. So I thought that was very good strategy, especially in the early days of the internet. I remember voting on these. I didn't even have internet. I think I went to my aunt's house who had internet and voted on who I wanted to win. So it says April and May of 1996. That was a publication date. And Dan Jurgens, of course, we know, massive artist.
Well, I was going to say is like normally I didn't appreciate these kind of books where, you know, Superman is going to fight the Hulk because you can't have a winner.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the rules are that if Superman wins, all the Hulk fans are going to be upset and vice versa. So now to leave it up to the fans, in theory, everybody wins.
You're right. Yeah, it usually ends in a draw. So here's some of the battles that they had. So Superman versus Hulk, and Superman defeated Hulk after exchanging punches and a burst of heat vision. So Superman won. We saw Spider-Man versus Superboy. With the advantages of his spider senses, Spider-Man won by tying up Superboy with impact webbing and electrocuting him. Ooh, okay. Spider-Man getting a little brutal there.
Just go to Lex Luthor and get some kryptonite and put it in your web solution.
There you go. Oh, see? Good job. That's why Ben is a co-writer on Lenny Vernon.
I say that's why then you don't have to be a, you know, sadistic and electrocute him. Jesus.
Then we had Batman versus Captain America. And let's see who won the Batman wins. Though they are both evenly matched, after hours of combat, a sudden flushing of the sewer knocks Captain America off balance. Oh, really? Okay. That's kind of a little bit of a cop out.
But Batman feels bad about it.
Yeah, he feels bad about it.
he exclaimed, "I lost and may have doomed an entire universe."
There you go. Or Captain America just said Martha.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, I didn't catch that. The sewer. So they must have been fighting in the sewer. Right? Evidently, I didn't read this at all. But Wolverine versus Lobo. Wolverine beats Lobo in a brutal bar fight, which is largely off-panel. Huh. Okay.
How are you going to have Lobo fighting Wolverine, and then it's all going to take place off-panel?
Yeah, I know. What's the point? I mean, that was a good one.
Exactly.
It's like, why don't we just not have it at all? But there's quite a few others. I won't go through every single one of them as far as the outcome. So it's Storm versus Wonder Woman, Aquaman versus Namor, Elektra versus Catwoman, Flash versus Quicksilver, Robin versus Jubilee. I got to read this one. Robin won by using his cape as a decoy and then tying up Jubilee. Oh, man.
That's such a Robin move.
He's such a Robin. Silver Surfer versus Green Lantern, and then Thor versus Shazam. I thought it was an okay. That was a fun battle mix-up, I guess. I think in the 80s, they had one, Batman versus Hulk. And that matchup just doesn't balance out very well.
No.
No, not at all. So I'm looking at some of these, and how can you have a winner when they're the same character? Like Aquaman versus Namor.
Yeah.
They're the same person.
We're going to drown him. So here's how Aquaman won. Aquaman won by summoning a whale to leap out of the water and land on top of Namor. So that's how he's considered the winner, because he was pinned under the whale and unable to move.
But couldn't Namor just be like, hey, whale, don't do that.
Hey, whale, get off me. Yeah, I know.
Because they're the same.
Is it like a three count, I guess, in wrestling, since he was pinned under? Right.
Well, I'm reading too, the Flash one using superior speed.
Yeah.
Yeah, no duh.
Yeah.
It's the Flash. Of course he was fast.
Yeah, Quicksilver is just a mutant who can run fast, but also, the Flash is like light speed.
Superior speed.
So I'm guessing they wanted more evenly matched, I guess, is what they were going for, because, you know, like in the previous one, Hulk versus Batman, just, you know, that does, on the surface, that doesn't pan out very well. But anyway, yeah, I thought these were good, or at least fun. I don't think I ever even bought any of these, but I liked the concept, and I'm sure you can still get these in trade. That's some fun covers. I mean, you're getting some pretty decent talent from both sides working on it.
Like Al said, I do like the idea of having the fans vote.
Yeah.
I would like to see them do something like that again now that the internet is actually more functional than it was in 86.
Yes, exactly. Now, I don't know if you remember the Death in the Family when they decided about Robin, killing off Robin. They did it by phone. So maybe that was more of a DC thing. You know, trying to use some new technology and get input from the fans. So we had the crossover event, but then after the crossover event, again, this is a way to extend this universe. So they amalgamated a bunch of comic book characters and combined them. Like this one was Spider-Man and Superboy. So you had that combination of characters. You have Spider-Boy. Then had Bruce Wayne, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. combination. So Nick Fury and Batman combination. This one sold well, Dark Claw. So you had Batman and Wolverine put together. Did you guys buy any of these or have any interest in any of these amalgamation ones?
I remember before they came out, seeing ads and things like that and being excited and getting our hands on a couple of these and then being disappointed.
Just didn't catch on, huh? I was kind of the same way. I saw it, but I was like, eh, not really that interested.
I think they fell short on the execution. The idea was good, but the execution just meh.
It was in 96-97, so the comic book flood was starting to definitely decline by this point. But here's a Storm Wonder Woman combination by John Byrne for the cover. Again, looks cool, but I never bought it. I just didn't have any interest for whatever reason. It was a fun concept, though. I like the idea, but I think you're right, Al. The execution just didn't work out too terribly well at all.
Yeah, it just it came off like a contract.
Yeah, yeah.
It was.
It was, and it was, yes. It's exactly what it was. So the running gag here is that we're getting comics in the 90s to make money. You know, we're going to buy these comics, buy these cards, and in 20 years, we're going to be millionaires. So an early step in Ben Crane's money-making plan is multiple revenue streams. Of course, we had a card series based upon the Amalgam Universe. So multiple revenue streams. This is a way to maximize your income, right, Ben?
How did I not know about these?
but it's step 7 in your current plan, right? This is an early step. Multiple revenue streams that you need to invest in, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah.
I definitely need these to round out my portfolio.
of worthless cards. 1996, they came out with a card series, and a lot of these are just panels from the comic. I know we talked about this in the card episode. An easy way to make cards is just grab a panel from one of the comics and slap it on a card. They're not, some of them are unique. I was looking at some of them, like this black bat one is unique, but this one at the top, the Super Soldier one, the Sparrow one, which is an amalgamation of Robin and Jubilee, is pulled from panels.
Robin, you already have the piles of artwork.
Well, yeah.
It makes sense.
Pulling from panels, though, is very much a Rob Liefeld thing, as we saw in the comic on the card thing. The Youngblood cards were just...
Yeah, it's lazy.
It's lazy. But it's a second revenue stream, right, Ben? I mean, the art's not too bad. You go through some of these.
No, it's good. Yeah.
Elastigirl. Whoa, I didn't even realize this. Elastigirl, that's from the Disney movie. That's kind of funny.
That's The Incredibles.
The Incredibles, yeah. That is, I didn't even realize I had an Elastigirl. Wow. Now, well, of course, that makes sense. Disney owns Marvel now, so I suppose they have the rights to it. But, or is it spelled different? Elasta versus Elasti. This is Elasti Girl.
Well, now, but not then.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. That's kind of cool.
Was she an amalgamation of?
Oh, Domino. Domino and Plastic Man are the combinations. I didn't even know about this one. Well, now we know. Again, it was good to look at, but it wasn't enough to get me to buy. Is kind of the bottom line, but at least for me at this time, I was kind of on my way out. Oh, I like this one. Okay. So you got Night Spectre and Speed Demon. They're connected. So you put the cards together, it creates a picture together. Oh, Thanoside. That's funny. They combined Thanos and Darkseid. That's a good one.
Of course, yeah.
That's not bad. Okay. Dr. Doomsday. Okay. Fun. Okay. But still, it's a fun. Did you guys have any of these at all?
No,
but I want them.
Now you want them. I don't remember. I'm sure they were at the comic book store, but I don't remember them really catching my eye because I wasn't interested in the comics. So, but you can still probably get some of these, I'm sure, in trades if you really want to check them out. So yeah, that's a crossover between DC and Marvel. Speculation, guys, do you think you'll ever see a DC Marvel crossover event again now that they're big conglomerate companies now?
Maybe.
Never say never.
You might in the comics. I don't think you'll ever see it in TV shows.
No.
Or movies.
So maybe on the comic book side. Okay. I kind of doubt it, in my opinion. I'm probably 90-10, 90% chance they won't, 10% chance they will do any sort of event just because they're so big now. I don't know that they can come together. But a guy made a good point, though, online. He said, now that comics are kind of in a decline, you know, this came at a time when comics were declining, and I think it was a way to generate some revenue. So maybe his theory was maybe we will see it because of the decline that they financially it might benefit them to do it. But my thought is, yeah, but Marvel is just a small part of Disney. And same thing with DC is a small part of Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
I hate to be Nancy negative, but I guess what's your thoughts? If they did do some sort of crossover event like this, would it be like last time, be kind of ho-hum, or do you think you would even bite on it?
I don't know if I'd bite on it. Maybe. It depends. Yeah. I mean, they really have to shoot the moon at this point. They've done this so many times. Like every decade, they've had everybody butt heads. If they come up with a really good idea, I'd probably bite at least extra.
Yeah. Yeah. By the trade or something like that. Yeah. So a couple other crossovers I want to just mention real quick. There was a Batman Spawn crossover that we saw back in the 90s. That was, I got these because I was a Spawn fan. So this one came out in 1994. Then they also had Batman Spawn for the DC version. And then you had the Spawn Batman for the Image version, which was done by Frank Miller and Todd McFarlane. That one was, I like that one better than the other one. But
yeah, that's the one I had.
Yeah, fun cover. And it's, you know, at the time, Frank Miller.
or a fun thing. Sorry, it was the this is where Batman throws the batarang and gets it stuck in Spawn's head.
Yeah.
And then in this Spawn continuity, he had it stitched up.
Oh.
So after this issue, you kept seeing Spawn with stitches on his face because of Batman. They kept that gag going.
That's right. I remember reading about that. Yeah, he used shoelaces to sew up his head. Yeah. They kept that for quite a while. I think it ended up being a magical item or something like that.
The end.
Did you have this one, Ben, or not?
I think my brother did, because he was a big Spawn fan.
Yeah.
And so I think I glanced through it when he had it.
Yeah, that's the only reason I had it was, I liked Batman and stuff, but I was definitely more into Spawn than Batman. Yep, there's the, right at the end. That's awesome. the War Devil one, the Batman Spawn one, that they had the two fight. And so the DC version, of course, Batman won, and the Image one, Spawn won the fight. But this one on the DC side, all of a sudden Spawn just, he tries to use his magical powers or his energy blast. All of a sudden he's like, my powers don't work all of a sudden. I don't know what's happening. And then he gets beat by Batman. It's kind of like the Hulk Batman crossover they did in the 80s. Batman came up with some sort of gas that caused Hulk to lose most of his strength, and that's how he was able to beat him.
Of course.
Got to have some sort of MacGuffin, I guess.
Got to have that cheat.
Yeah, the cheat, yeah. But I think, Al, you said they're going to do another Batman Spawn crossover?
Yeah, that's currently in the works.
And they're also going to reprint the Batman Classic Collection, the Batman Spawn crossover. So they're going to put them together in November of 22. So they're going to re-release it. I think it coincides with the 30th anniversary of Spawn, I'm sure.
I'm sure, yeah.
So that's probably a big part of it. Fun book. Art's good. Of course, you got Frank Miller and Todd McFarlane on this, on some of these. So you can't beat that. But another one I liked was the Batman Predator crossover. So we had DC Dark Horse. I thought this one was a really fun book. But at the time, I was a Predator fan. And so it caught my eye. So Dave Gibbons is the writer. Andy Kubert's the penciler. Can't go wrong on the art there, right, Al?
It's good. When did this come out?
This came out early. It was in 91. Yeah, 1991. So December 91. To February 92, there were three issues. I really liked it. I thought it was a good story, because Batman's trying to figure out who's doing all these grisly murders. Of course, he eventually starts figuring out it's some sort of alien and finds out it's the Predator. I thought it was really well done, in my opinion. Those hardcover, not hardcover, but had the different types of covers that are kind of the hard cardboard or hard cardstock.
Yeah.
So here's issue number three. The cover was okay, but I really like this one. Issue number two with the red.
That's a good one.
Excellent cover. And then issue number one, another pretty good cover. I would say two is the best out of the bunch, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's intriguing. Do they dig into all of the Predator's gadgets and toys? For instance, it's hard for Batman to hide in the shadows with infrared.
Yeah, so in the first battle between the Predator and Batman, Batman gets his butt kicked pretty bad and ends up at the Wayne Manor just kind of recovering for about a week. So everybody's wondering, where's the bat? And then, of course, Batman. Oh, here's the covers. I don't know what I was thinking. This is the cover I was thinking of. It's kind of drawn, painted cover.
Yeah.
So they must have had alternate covers here. I didn't realize this. Yeah, so this is the good one, the number one, where you have the fold out of the front and the back together. So anyway, yeah, back to the battle. So Batman gets beat the first round. He barely survives because he has a remote with his car, the Batmobile, on it as the Predator is just about ready to finish him off, and touches the button and the car runs over the Predator and he hops in and gets away and recovers for about a week. And then they have this big battle where he comes. Batman uses his special armor. Let's see if I can find it here. And this is an iconic panel with Predator armor. So this is an excellent panel, by the way. And so now round two, he actually defeats the Predator and saves Gotham. A real good, very Bane-ish as far as kind of Batman getting his butt kicked by the alien and defeated kind of reminds you kind of a precursor to what's going to happen when he takes on Bane here in a couple years. But the trade has tons of alternate panels and alternate covers, just like any trade does when they collect them. He gets a samurai sword because he beats the Predator. Batman gets a samurai sword from one of the other Predators. Of course, the Predator being defeated has to kill himself. So, fun story.
So wait a minute, there were other Predators that came in?
Not till the very end. So the very end, the ship shows up with the other Predators, and okay, they take the body of the defeated Predator with them.
So did this come out before or after the Predator 2 movie?
This came out in 91, so it would have been after Predator 2.
Okay. It's Predator 2, just with Batman instead of Danny Glover.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, he's investigating grisly murders, finds out it's the Predator, beats him, and gets a present.
Exactly.
Yeah, Predator 2 came out in 1990.
So this is definitely, well, this, as you remember, Dark Horse was doing Predator versus any IP they can find. Alfred gets involved a little bit. He shoots one of those guns with like the kind of the funnel end. I know Eddie talked about it one time where you can kind of stuff anything in it.
A blunderbuss.
Blunderbuss. There we go. Yes. He uses one of those on the Predator. It is a good story overall. Just very well drawn, I think. It was early in the Predator versus model, so it wasn't getting a little old or stale as it did a little bit later. In my opinion, it started to get a little redundant, like you just did Ben. You said, let's just take out Danny Glover and add in Bruce Wayne, and there you go.
But it is so fun. I mean, I do like the panels. It looks good.
It does. It's very well done. You can still get it now. Here is another step in Ben Crane's comic book investment strategy.
If it's another card series, I don't know what I'm going to do.
No. This is step number 13, create scarcity. The odds of this being reprinted ever again is almost zero, because you're never going to get all the people that own this IP to get along. So you've got DC, but then you've also got Warner Brothers. You've also got Fox, Marvel, and Disney would all have to agree to reprint this.
Wow.
If you've got an original copy of this, odds are it's going to go up in value, because they're never going to reprint this again, even in trade probably.
It's got to be worth like tens of dollars at this point.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you have the floppies version. Now, the trade just came out, well, not just, probably 8-9 years ago they did a re-release of it, but the originals, though, if you have the originals, they're probably actually worth something. So, but scarcity,
right? Yeah,
right, Ben. Scarcity that drive up the price.
That's exactly it.
Well, did you guys have this one at all or not? I don't think you did, if I remember correctly.
I was never a huge DC fan, so I wouldn't have got into it.
Well, let me look up. I guess now that you mentioned it, Ben, I should have looked this up. Batman versus Predator. We'll see what the originals are worth, and you might be right. They might be worth tens of dollars. Oh, four whole dollars, Ben. $4 if you have number one. Then there's a variant cover, which is worth $8 if you have the variant.
Say the variant cover, that's where the money is.
Not even tens of dollars. But if you hold on to these, based on the no chance of a re-release strategy, in 20 years, it might be worth maybe $10.
Right. Well, I was going to say, it's only worth $4, but originally it probably sold for like two.
Yeah. Well,
so it's already doubled in value.
Cover price was, I think, $390 or $295. So let me look here. Now, the variant cover was $395 cover price. I remember that because I have that one, and it's worth $8, but I think...
Doubled in value.
Yeah. Oh, see? But still, double the value. Yeah. Cover price was $1.95. Still doubled the value in 31 years.
There you go. Remember, the Ben Crane strategy motto is, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Exactly. Fun. It's still a fun book. So I'd get the trade if you can, because like Like I said, I don't think this is ever going to be reprinted again. So, because you just list off those companies, I mean, the odds of all of those coming together, but I don't know. I guess a money grab, like we said, 90s was just a money grab, essentially. Maybe they would.
Or eventually Disney will just buy all those companies and...
Well, there you go. There you go. That now Ben nailed it. Yeah. What is that investment strategy number 39? Buy all your competitors out and then raise the prices?
Yeah. The final step in my investment strategy is create a monopoly and exploit it.
Exploit it. Exactly. Oh, man. We've got next is old comic book ads. I think, Al, you have an ad for us from Lenny Vernon, right?
Reading comics growing up, there was always those ads, like the ones that had all the different crappy sales things in there. You know, where you could sell so many tickets or whatever, candy bars, you're going to get a bike or a skateboard or some fantastic thing.
Yes.
And so when we were doing Lenny Vernon, that was our idea. We wanted to do an homage to those ads. So that's why we did the fake ads in Lenny Vernon.
Yes, exactly. They had some. Let's see. I'm going to pull up a few here. But I remember a lot of these. So speaking of cards again, there was always ads for these, the Overpower card game. Do you remember the Overpower card game, anybody? Did either of you buy this, or you probably remember seeing it?
I remember seeing the ads.
I don't know that I ever bought any. I remember seeing some in a store, but they were pushing the card games were getting pushed real hard. Then there was the, do you remember this? Hero Illustrated. So remember we had Wizard, but I kind of forgot that there was another one called Hero Illustrated that was pretty good. I never actually bought it, but did you guys buy any of these?
I remember seeing ads for it, but I never did. It never came across a newsstand.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever saw that.
So I happened to see an ad. I was looking for ads, and I remember an ad for Hero Illustrated, and I remember seeing it in the comic book store, but I never, you know, I had Wizard. That was kind of the de facto comic book magazine. But there was Hero Illustrated, Wizard, and then Previews. The only one that's still around is Previews, but that's because Diamond owns it. So obviously it's going to still be around. But
right. Distribution.
Yeah. You have a Pit comic inside on this one, Hero Illustrated number 6. You can just tell this came out in, this issue was December of 93. So Image was just huge. You can just see Image stuff everywhere. Obviously video game ads has a lot of your stereotypical stuff. We got stuff from the creator. Stan Lee has a little article, lots of write-ins from the readers, lots of, okay, Hero. So you got art from the fans. Did you ever submit any of your art to Wizard, Al? Okay. They got a lot of fan art in here from people. I'm sure kids were ecstatic when they'd see their art in this, but this is very, you can tell, it's just 90s written all over it. Just the layouts and very much like Wizard. But I was reading up on it a little bit. A lot of people thought Hero Illustrated was better than Wizard, but it just, you know, couldn't. Wizard was the dominant one by far.
Wizard was all flash or something.
Exactly. You have an ad for Previews in Hero Illustrated. That's kind of funny. So your competitor is putting an ad in here. You had the Previews, the magazine, but then you had Previews that all the comic book shops had to pre-order their stuff. And
I think it's the same thing.
That's what I thought. So I don't know why they categorize Previews in with Wizard and Hero Illustrated, but you can find this on archive.org. I found it, a scanned in copy that you can look through and at least kind of.
The 1993 Marvel Masterpieces from Skybox. Ben, how much have you made off those?
He's calculating the pennies right now.
Right.
Oh.
I think I had a few of those, but I never had a complete set.
That's a fun one. And then I've got some other ones. Fleer, of course, always had ads in comic books for their sports cards. So, of course, you got Scottie Pippen. Let's see. Ren and Stimpy parodies in here. Got the, from the X-Factor. It did like a Ren and Stimpy X-Factor amalgam. Of course, video game ads, just your Nintendo and Sega Genesis. ads all over the place.
All over.
Yes.
It's like we're the same people buying comics were the ones playing video games in the early 90s.
Right.
Jeez, I wonder. Let's see. Candy ads. Okay, here's one. Fire in the Sky. So movie ads. This was from Silver Surfer, April 93. So they got movie ads. Here's what sparked. I was like, oh, I remember that cover with the Predator on the front from Hero Illustrated. I'm like, yeah. I kind of remember seeing this. And so then I did some digging around. Like, oh, yeah, that was a thing. All color, all action, all thrills, all heroes. I love that.
That's a really subtle ad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what they're trying to pitch there.
Yeah. Is there hey Ben, is there an ad strategy in your investment opportunities?
Not really. I mean, I try to advertise the investment strategy, but that actually costs money. It doesn't make money.
True. That's on your profit and loss sheet. That's on the loss section.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's what Al was talking about a little bit, where you can get these little prizes, and
I would get so excited and find something in there, like, you know, I'm gonna tell my parents, like, hey, for this. And like, yeah, it's all a scam, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Like Boy's Life or whatever, selling cards or something. I don't know. I don't remember what it was. But oh, here's an Army of Darkness ad in Morbius number 7, 1993. So, again,
there you go.
Lots of movie ads in the comic books. Oh, then you got to have your Clearasil ad. I remember these. There's constantly in the Marvel. Clearasil must have bought a crap ton of ad time because they were in every single X-Men comic I had.
It didn't take a lot of market research and trend analysis to know who the target audience was here.
Yeah, exactly. Teenage boys. Let's put Clearasil ads in comic books. I mean, and I probably.
That's right.
Oh, man. Made sense. When they knew who their target audience was. Here's a Castlevania ad in New Warriors number 9, 1991. Again, video games.
Oh, I remember that ad.
Yeah. That was a good ad, I think. And you could, oh, yes, because you could win a trip to Dracula's hometown. Did you fill that one out, Ben?
I think I might have because I was a huge Castlevania fan.
Okay. Yeah. But I looked in here, though. We can't fill it out again because we have to have it in by. I think it was August of 91. So unfortunately,
Just missed it.
Dang it. Yeah. But I tell you, like you said, Ben, you see these like, oh yeah, I remember these.
Yeah. Like that Castlevania one. I specifically remember that one.
That was a good game, but yeah, they knew who their readers were. You got cereal ads. We're going more candy ads. This one is actually a newer one. September of 97 for a Fruity Pebbles ad. So again, sugared cereals, video games, and Clearasil kind of sums up the 90s comic book readers. Here's another video game. Oh, the Silver Surfer Nintendo game. Oh, my gosh.
I had that. I beat that.
You did?
I did.
Really?
Yeah. It was the only game I ever beat. I've never beat Mario Brothers, but I beat that game.
Really? What was the game like? I've never talked to anybody that actually played it.
It was mostly a side scroll. You're going up and down and dodging and shooting things. Every now and then you'd have a level where you're looking at them from up top and doing the same thing. And it was just maddening and infuriating.
Infuriating. So side scrolling shooter, basically. Well, see, Al, you should have sent this in because there's a contest. So take a photo of your high score and send it to Arcadia Systems. Let's see, must be received by March 31st, 1991, and you will get a Silver Surfer watch. You missed out, Al.
Yeah, I did not have that watch. I did.
It's a Personal Watercraft Industry Association. Okay. Look at this. So they had to have a disclaimer on this ad because it has a picture of a jet ski on it. The Watercraft Industry Association recommends all jet ski operators have a valid driver's license. That's awesome. So even lawyers were involved. That's with lame. Ads back in 1991. Yeah, you could have gotten a Silver Surfer watch, Al. Oh, no, wait. So if you send it in, you get the watch.
Missed out.
Okay, they send out 1,000 watches, but one winner will get the Silver Surfer jet ski. That's why this is on here. So you could have won a jet ski. Yeah, Jesse Kiefer bribing people to play that game. So, Al, you could have had a jet ski and a watch, a Silver Surfer jet ski.
I don't think my mom would have let me have the jet ski.
Just a guess. Oh, man. That was a fun. I didn't know that. After reading this, had a lot. He could win the jet ski. That's great. Yeah. So, yeah. So, Al and Ben can be riding the Silver Surfer jet ski on the lake.
And we could ride together, like you guys in the picture there.
Yeah, exactly. So Ben missed out on his opportunity to go to Transylvania, and Al missed out on the Silver Surfer jet ski. What could have been? But yeah, any other ads that you guys can think of? That's the only ones I could think of that were kind of fun and interesting, to say the least.
And it really summed it up. It was the Supreme and video games.
Yeah.
Just all of them. That was every book. Well, that and the Charleston Chew.
Oh, yes. All the candy ads.
Yeah, because, well, in the Charleston Chew, you could get that free comic, but you had to spend $30 on Charleston Chew to get a free $1.50 comic.
Yeah. Oh, Jesse, now all Jesse wants to see is Al on a jet ski, a Silver Surfer jet ski.
It's a magical sight, Mr. Kiefer.
Here's another ad. I remember seeing these for the up-and-coming comics and American Entertainment. Yeah, I remember. I got their magazine because I think you could... you know, send in and they'd subscribe to it. And then they would send you their little flyer that was printed on like newsprint and about the upcoming comics. And
yep. That's how I got most of my collection.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, it worked. Cause I remember buying from them multiple times. Well, I lived in a small town, so we didn't have a very good comic book shop, but here's of course more cards, which Ben, I believe, has these. This is Marvel Series 1, I believe.
I do have those.
Yeah. Those actually have some value, and in 30 years, we'll have even more value. Oh, man.
Yes.
Exactly. I'm going to look at some 80s ads. I kind of want to get a... Now, the 80s ads are even more hilarious, actually. Oh, man, what is this? Marvel Action Universe, a TV show?
What?
I don't remember this. Marvel Action Universe.
Probably because it was bad.
Check your local listings for time and station. I do not remember this. Must have been on CBS or something, I bet you, because I didn't get CBS. I have to, we're going to...
How did you not get CBS?
Just where we were at, it would come in sometimes, but we all had ABC and NBC is the only two I could get where I was living. So
wow.
I was kind of limited. I know. I was sheltered big time. Oh, it is. Marvel Action Universe was a 1988 to 1991 syndicated television block from Marvel Productions. Featured adaptations of the Dino Riders, RoboCop, and reruns of the Spider-Man 1981 cartoon. Oh, okay. So just so they slapped Spider-Man in there with a couple of others, and that's the Dino Riders, RoboCop, and Pride of the X-Men. Oh, I wonder if that was that early X-Men animated show. It's kind of a test for the early, you know, before the 1992 or 93 X-Men came out. That's where that came from.
Is it Pride with a Y?
Yes, it is. Pride with a
so
Y.
It's a show around Kitty Pryde.
Yes, basically Kitty Pryde and the X-Men is kind of the pitch.
Yeah.
So I don't know when it came out or what TV channel it was on. Doesn't say.
That whole thing, though, is just so... about the 80s because RoboCop as a cartoon being pitched to kids.
Yeah, a rated R movie is being pitched to kids. We had no ethics back then.
A hard R satirizing and making a huge statement about police states.
Yeah.
Let's sell it to kids.
Let's sell it and then, yeah, come out with a TV show, action figures, and all sorts of different toy lines. Rated R toy lines.
Because it'll sell cereal.
And cereal, yeah, RoboCop cereal, yep. These are, like this one here from 1983, very reminiscent of comic books with all these. Get your Tony Atlas body, or Atlas body, whatever it is. Wanted video game players for arcade action. I mean, all these just ridiculous. Sometimes these are, here we go. Bubble Yum, Bubble Gum. I wonder if they make that anymore.
Oh, my Lord.
I love that stuff. Did you guys love bubble yum gum?
Oh,
who
yeah.
Didn't? Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Who didn't?
That and Hubba Bubba.
Yes, Hubba yes. Bubba and Big League Chew.
Another fun Big League Chew, you know, another fun, hey, let's take an extremely adult item and market it to kids.
Yes, exactly. They had a lot of Big League Chew ads in comic books. I remember those. I remember seeing those a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, here's Al. You were talking about earn valuable cash prizes. Start earning $5 to $10 to $20 a week selling your favorite comics and magazines to your friends, parents, and neighbors, and earn valuable prizes. Wow.
Earn a 12-year-old Andrew.
Yeah. See, Ben, here's money making strategy right here in front of you. Marketing, get kids to sell stuff.
Right. Find loopholes in child labor laws.
Step number 17, find children and exploit them to sell your stuff.
It's multi-level marketing, Ben.
That's right.
Oh, man. So you earn $1 to $2.25 per magazine subscription or valuable gift points to win. You can win TVs, superhero merchandise, radios, bicycles, and much more. Oh, man. It's so easy.
I always love those things. Because when you earn the points to get like the big prizes, you know, like you could get a TV.
Yeah, if you.
But you need like 3 million points yeah. to get a TV, so you'd have to sell like 100,000 magazines or something.
It's like the Chuck E. Cheese thing. You earn 8,000 tickets and you get a little eraser top.
Right. But they make it seem like it's so easy. They're like, "Oh, you could get a TV doing this."
Yeah, exactly.
It's faster and easier to mow 8 lawns.
Yeah, exactly. So it's so easy and rewarding, whether you're selling The Amazing Spider-Man, The Hulk, TV Guide, or Newsweek. There's a magazine that will meet everyone's interest. What could be easier, Ben? What could be easier?
I think, like Al said, the actual manual labor yeah. mow lawns.
Send for your kit today. Send no money. Nothing to lose, nothing to buy. Everything to win. Ooh, these are catchphrases you can use, Ben, in your strategy, investment strategy.
Those are such pyramid scheme phrases.
I know. It just
multi-level.
Nothing to lose, nothing to buy.
Yeah. Oh,
you only get, positives.
And you get a free poster with your first order.
Oh, well, there it is.
Worth it.
You need to fill this out, Ben, and send it in and see if they send anything back. That'd be great.
Oh, that's horrible.
Oh, you can get a 20th anniversary Marvel Comics calendar. Oh, wow. You can go back to the 70s and boys earn $1 to $6 a week. Sell grit in your spare time. Again, another pyramid scheme. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, man.
I think they need to work on their wording for their ad there. I mean, you shouldn't start an ad with boys come earn some money.
Yeah. Well, it was the 70s. It
starts off sketchy and only gets worse.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, those are funny. So now Al and Ben, you have investment strategies you can put in the next Lenny Vernon comic and have a multi-level marketing ad in the Lenny Vernon comic.
Here we go.
Yeah. Lots of little catchphrases you can throw in there to get little kids to send you their money. Oh, man. That was good. You get a free flippy flyer. Oh, this is for Superman 3 movie.
It's never free.
Yeah. So when you buy some Dial or Liquifor or Tone soap, you get a collapsible flying disc made of fabric. If you wonder what you have to buy, though. Probably have to send
in. I feel like it's a hard sell for an 8-year-old to tell his mom what kinds of soap to buy at the store.
Yeah. Well, plus if it's in a kid's comic book, I mean, kids don't take showers at this age anyway, so.
Right. The idea that an 8-year-old, like I said, is going to go to mom and be like, hey, we need to switch from Zest to Dial.
Oh, you need 4 proofs of purchase. So you got to buy 4 bars of soap. And then you get a flippy flyer, Superman 3 flippy flyer.
Not worth it.
It's not worth it. just like not seeing the movie Superman 3. I was so disappointed by that movie.
Right?
As a kid, you're like, oh, this really stinks. This movie's horrible.
But it was still better than 4.
It's still okay. Well,
low bar.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Right. It doesn't take much to. I mean, you could put that bar on the ground, like Ben said, and just step, walk over it, and you're still ahead. In fact, you could probably put the bar 6 feet underground and still be better than Superman 4. I don't think I've actually watched Superman 4 just because I heard it was so bad. So
it was awful.
It was awful, yeah. 90 minutes.
I think I've seen it once.
Is that 90 minutes you'll never get back? The only thing that was creepy or interesting in Superman 3 was when the lady got turned into the robot. That freaked me out as a kid.
You did have the bad Superman.
Yeah, the bat. Oh, yeah, that. Okay, that was kind of cool. Yeah, yeah, I'll give him that.
Everything else was trash.
Everything else was trash. Yeah, yeah, the bad Superman fight. That was actually pretty cool. Yeah, flicking peanuts and having break glasses. That was great. Yeah. I think I tried that as a kid. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm gonna see if I can. How does this work? They're not breaking.
And you had all the peanuts to clean up.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, hey. I think that's all I got, unless you guys have anything we want to throw in last minute, but that was a fun trip down memory lane. And everybody learned how to pitch multi-level marketing ideas to children.
That's right.
So, well, maybe you can, you have the ad from Lenny Vernon, right, Al? Can you maybe send me a copy of it, scan it in for me, and I can put it in the show notes for everybody to see.
Which one?
Any of whatever one you think you want to throw in.
Yeah, we can kick
it. Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes so people listening later can check it out and then check out all of the Lenny Vernon comics. I think we do have a collection of those. I can't remember if you put them in a compendium yet.
In the trade paper, in the trade, the first trade, we do have all the ads from the book. So.
Okay.
And there's going to be more in the second trade and the third trade.
Awesome. Okay. But you can get all the Lenny Vernon goodness all in one book if you want to.
That's right.
Any insight? I guess I should ask you before we recorded. Any plans for Lenny Vernon in 22 or 23?
We do have issue 12 that's going to be coming out at some point. And then currently working on collecting issues 5 through 8 and then going to be collecting issues 9 through 12.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. Yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes to Lenny Vernon, how you can buy them, check them out. And also Lenny Vernon ads. They're hilarious. You'll love it. And you'll definitely get the multi-level marketing scheme idea. So
that's right.
All right. Well, hey, thanks guys. And thanks for listening. And until next time, nerd it up.